entrepreneurs and anxiety, it's basically the same word.
Welcome to the Business Made Simple podcast, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network. I'm your guest host, James Sweeting, director of story here at Business Made Simple, and I'm joined by
podcast producer Bobby Richards. Guess what, everybody? We're filling in for Don today.
Yes, we are, Bobby. Hey, Bobby, I got a question for you. Do you ever feel anxious?
Yes, anxious about taking over the podcast today for the first time?
Right now.
Yeah, I'll own it. Yes, absolutely, I feel anxious. And I know this is a feeling that is common amongst what I can only assume all of the business owners listening. You're running a business, the weight of everything, the decisions. But yes, James, thank you for asking. I am feeling some anxiety.
Well, you're not alone in that, Bobby. And today we're going to get into it, and you're actually going to hear some great tips and tools to help make your anxiety work for you. Our guest today is Dr. David Rosmarin. He's an associate professor at Harvard Medical School. He's the founder of Center for Anxiety, and he's the author of the new book, Thriving with Anxiety, 9 Tools to Make Anxiety Work for You. So if you're feeling like you're just paralyzed a little bit by anxiety right now, or friction with your team because of anxiety, this episode is for you. It's going to give you some practical tools so that you can thrive and grow your business.
If you are a startup with big growth dreams, then you need a CRM that can keep up. From marketing and sales to support and content and everything in between, HubSpot's all-in-one customer platform has startups covered. And with the HubSpot for Startups program, you can save 30 to 90% on a platform that scales right along with you. Increase leads, boost revenue, and improve your customer experience. HubSpot for Startups helps you do it all. Plus, they offer 24/7 customer support and integrations with more than 1,500 of today's most popular apps. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention, their constantly evolving collection of resources and articles created specifically to help startups scale. HubSpot is trusted by some of the most successful startups and more than 100,000 companies around the world. To see if you are eligible to join the HubSpot for Startups program and take your growth to the next level, visit HubSpot.com/startups.
David, thank you so much for being on the Business Made Simple podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, and we are thrilled to dive into this topic of anxiety with you, and you know, especially with your new book, Thriving with Anxiety, 9 Tools to Make Anxiety Work for You. I mean, that sounds like a perfect fit for our small business owners that are listening to this podcast right now that are in our community, because, oh my goodness, is that just, you know, that's part of the reality of starting and building and growing and scaling your business, is you kind of have that anxiety hand in hand as you go. Interfacing with small business owners and people starting their business, do you find that that's true?
There's no question.
Yeah.
I mean, entrepreneurs and anxiety, it's basically the same word.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what happens when you have a dream, you got a vision, and the rubber hits the road and you're pushing it and you're just trying to make it work and trying to get everything going. You're going to hit some anxiety. It's just the way it is. And, you know, my approach is that it's not a bad thing. I think we medicalize it. We turn this into some disease. And it's not. If you're realizing a dream, guess what? Like, you're going to get ramped up. It's just going to happen.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I'm grateful to get to be here with you today and to get to dive in a little bit. I would love to maybe start up front with, you know, talking about the new book and specifically just focusing on the first 2 steps. But you start about in that first step talking about, you know, stress and anxiety. And I wonder if you could just share just a little bit when you talk about kind of the differences between those two and what that looks like.
Yeah. Stress is when you have too much to do and not enough time, not enough money. But, you know, there are ways that the symptoms of stress can mimic anxiety, right? Like your heart's going to start to rev up. Your breathing is going to be more labored. Muscle tension. Some people get it in their stomach. You know, those kinds of things. And the reason why is because if we perceive that delta between our current, you know, needs, what we have to accomplish, and our resources, and when there's a difference there, as a failure, that's when it turns into anxiety. As opposed to recognizing, just sometimes we're going to have some depletion of our resources and learning to sort of weather it, and recalibrating and rebalancing, you know, on the weekends and with family and holidays or whatever it is. But stress can turn into anxiety as well. And that's when it really compounds and becomes a big problem.
And I guess I'd love to hear a little bit more about that turn from stress into anxiety. Kind of what does that look like?
It's all about judgment. It's all about the judgment of oneself. if I'm feeling uncomfortable and then I look at myself and say, oh no, I shouldn't be feeling this way because I'm weak or because something's wrong with me or because I'm not getting it right or because the world shouldn't be this hard or because of whatever narrative it is that goes through my head, that's what's going to turn that little bit of stress, that little bit of normal anxiety into something much more substantial. And that's where I think we need to reset our expectations for how we're going to feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Bobby, I see you got something. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'll own. I've had a little anxiety going, oh, how am I going to chime in and ask a question? Because there's anxiety at all times. I know, David, when you're talking about that reset, I'm speaking for myself. And then I'm sure, yes, of course, the business owner and the listeners out there, how do you do that reset? How are you able to, in that moment, identify it and then almost in a way, and I don't know if it's like this, step outside yourself for a second to go, hey, do these steps, do this thing, and you're able to get to the other side of that. What's the best way to lean into it?
First and foremost is to recognize you are going to be anxious. Think about it. How many people have you met in the last 30 days who had no anxiety at all? Zero.
Yeah.
The answer is zero. But if you go to a doctor, any physician, and you say you're having some level of anxiety, some level of worry, you know what the guy in the or the girl in the white coat is going to do. They're going to get out their prescription pad and they're going to write, oh, this is a disease. Something's wrong here. Here you go. And there's a difference between high levels of anxiety. Let's take a 0 to 10 scale. Okay. A 7, 8, 9 level. Okay. Like we got to talk about that. Fine. And there might be some things we have to do, but we have a culture now where a 1, a 2, a 3 is considered to be a failure. And it's something's wrong with me and something's wrong with my kids if they're feeling anxious.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't be feeling this way at all. And the minute we start to feel that little bump, the normal bumps of anxiety, which happen day to day, especially if you're pushing it as an entrepreneur, pushing it in any field, that anxiety, that interpretation of it as a problem dumps more adrenaline, more epinephrine into our systems and creates a cascade that anxiety pops up to high levels that are intolerable. Wow. So step number one is, you are going to feel at least a little bit of discomfort. And that's because you're human, not because you're sick.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's something that we all experience. And it also, I appreciate what you said earlier too, just about that turn from stress to anxiety and really almost that self-judgment, critical voice that comes in our head and can, ramp up with all these, I should be doing this. I should be here. I should whatever. And that kind of makes it spiral up in a way.
Yeah. There's another voice, by the way, which is catastrophizing. Mm. I can't handle this anxiety. I'm not going to be able to tolerate it. It's going to mess up my business. And often that is not true. I've never had anxiety kill a patient before, ever.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll be okay, Bobby.
Okay. Well, David, there's one thing that you, in that idea of that, because it's a spiral and sort of how you're talking about it, lean into it, accept it. There's something that you talk about in your book. You talk about a positive spiral versus the stages of what you call an anxiety spiral. Mm-hmm. Could you break those down?
I sure can. But, we talked about two steps before, you were asking about.
Yeah.
And the first step, again, is acceptance. I'm going to feel anxious. And the second step is, how can I use this anxiety towards something positive in my life? That's really where the opportunity is. Once we know I'm going to feel uncomfortable, my heart is going to be pounding sometimes, I'm going to have sweating that I don't like, my stomach's going to be in knots, it's going to be a lousy day, week, month, whatever it is, we're going to go through it. That's the reality. Once we can truly, really accept it, then I think we can have tools to be able to use that in a positive way. But many people misuse the tools and they're like, oh, this will get rid of my anxiety. No, don't do that.
Yeah.
Because that's going to make it worse.
Yeah. And it really sounds like even just, looking through the book and in our conversation so far, it's not a getting rid of anxiety. It's an accepting it for what it is. It's a reframe it's not a bad thing, but it's actually something that can be useful for you.
Yeah. And it is. It is useful for us. And now that we've accepted our anxiety, now what can we actually do to use it in a positive, constructive way?
Yeah, would love to hear a little bit about, it seems like both the anxiety spiral, the positive spiral, they both start with the trigger, being triggered by something, but would kind of love to hear about the differences between those two a little bit.
Yeah, so that comes up in the first part of the book, which talks about how anxiety can enhance our relationship with ourselves. Okay, so this I've definitely seen with business owners before, where people are just pushing and moving and grooving and doing everything they can to get the plane off the tarmac, right? Like you're doing just whatever you possibly can to get to small business to go, And they get out of touch often. The business owners will get out of touch with their emotions and become disconnected from people who are around them because of it, especially their kids, especially their spouses. And what can happen over time, ironically, for the people, mostly for the people who are successful in business, is that they become less in touch with feelings, with how they feel. And that can actually eventually create ruptures, not only in their family, but also in their business, because they're not able to tune into the emotions of their staff. They might end up in a Me Too situation. I've definitely seen that plenty of times because they don't realize how they're coming across. So there's this whole world of emotions that when people lean into their anxiety and allow themselves to experience it, as opposed to just plowing through and always focusing on the work, if we take the moments to actually like, okay, I'm really stressed out right now, to take a mental inventory, it's hard to do that, to admit that struggle, but it's so healthy. It's just part of being human. So like, I'll give you, you know, even cases that I've seen of a young entrepreneur, male, who came in, started feeling anxious and didn't like the feelings, because no one does, it's uncomfortable. Working an 80-hour week in order to get rid of the feelings. And then eventually it keeps catching up on him. So starts drinking, starts partying, really doesn't have a whole lot of connection. The business eventually takes off, but those patterns stayed with him for years. And it wasn't a pretty picture. You know, at the end, you know, things did start to unravel. What I would have liked him to do, you know, in his 20s, 30s, when he was building his business, was to actually have someone to talk to say, like, I'm really struggling right now. I'm stressed. It's not easy to have those conversations, right? It's easier to just like plow forward, do what you got to do, you know, drink it away, you know, medicate it away, do whatever. But if we take the opportunities of anxiety to speak to a friend about it, just to talk to ourselves about it, even go for, start running, start doing something productive with it, you know, physiologically, we can actually move to a place of greater, I would call it wholeness, but I think ultimately success.
What are some things and some signals that we would be able to identify almost like a check engine light with ourselves that we can sort of get ahead of this? And like you said, be able to lean into it so that it doesn't necessarily take over. And then we're in the thick of it. We're not able to really see it.
Firstly, everybody's check engine light is going off.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
So it's just a matter of whether you notice it or whether you just keep driving. You're like, I think it's okay.
Right? I don't hear anything. Yeah.
But something's going to be wrong. Like if you're starting a business, you're running a small business, you're running your family, like things are going to get crazy sometimes. So let's get that straight. The question then is, can you tune into the check engine light? And here's a very simple strategy. Every day, put it in your calendar. How stressed did I feel that day? How much was there an imbalance between my level of resources that I had and the demands that were placed on me? Was my level of stress a 9 out of 10, 7, 8, or a 9, really high? 4, 5, or 6, was it medium? Or was it 1, 2, or 3, low? You don't even have to do a 0 to 10 scale. You could even just say, do I have high, medium, or low stress today? That's it. Put it in your calendar, log it, and then tell one other person, my stress has been high this week. I'm not having such a stressful week, uncharacteristically. Or my stress has been in the medium range, and just being aware of it. It's more a matter of what we do with our anxiety than whether we're going to have it. You're going to have it.
Yeah.
So now what do we do with it? That awareness is gold.
Yeah.
That's great. And it gives you ownership of it. I mean, talk about ultimately leaning in. Mm-hmm. You're owning it. You're going, hey, I know this is here. And now I'm going to even go deeper into it. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And I love that. Taking time at the end of the day to reflect on your experience throughout the day. And that's a great time to, you know, look back and go, where were those moments today? And then to proactively move forward and share that and communicate that with someone to bring another into it as well. I'm curious about, how about, you know, in the moment of the day to day, whether it's, again, that check engine light coming on, or, you know, smoke signals, whatever it is for you, those signs that there's some anxiety creeping in. I'd love to hear you kind of speak to maybe some external signs that we could be aware of, and maybe some internal signs as well.
Yeah. Great. So for feeling anxious during the day, firstly, it's going to happen. And what do you do? You know, there's a couple ways to do it. There's really two main strategies. The one is going to be leaning into it in order to build resilience. Like if you can say to yourself, hey, I'm feeling super tense right now, but I know this is necessary and I think I can do this. I'm going to keep pushing for the next hour, 2 hours, but put a limit on it. and be like, this is my goal in order to build my resilience. The way I'd like to think about that is like working out at a gym. You go to a gym, you have a goal. You're going to do, I don't know, 3 sets, 12 reps of 150, 200, whatever it is that you're doing, arm curls, bench presses. If it's cardiovascular, you're going to do 30 minutes at maximum heart rate, 80% of your maximum heart rate, whatever it is that your workout is. If you have a plan, you go and you execute it and you move. So emotionally, it's the same thing. So if we lean into it with the goal of increasing our emotional strength, that can be a great resilience building exercise. So that's the sort of the one major strategy. Like, okay, the next 3 hours, I'm going to pound it, but then I'm shutting off. Like at 5 o'clock, I'm done, or at 4 o'clock, or 6 o'clock, whatever it is, 8 o'clock, I don't care. But set a time. I'm not just going to work and work and work and work and work and never recalibrate. And then comes the other strategy, which is obviously like, I am off now. I'm going to speak to someone, I'm going to watch a movie, I'm going to chill, I'm going to go for a walk. You know, that can be 10 minutes on a really crazy day. It could be you only get a 10 minute break. And I'm okay with that, but you need something that reset that, you know, and those are kind of the two main things. When you lean into the one versus the other, well, that's more of a clinical discussion, yeah. But the idea is to be aware of it so you can make an informed decision.
It sounds like those externals too are something that it probably would be beneficial to, you know, lock that in a block on your calendar. Know when that time's going to happen each day that you're going to, you know, meditate, tune out, be able to kind of turn off or transition into and away from work, stuff like that.
You can try.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I find that difficult to like sort of like have a mental set, like I know I'm going to be able to, you know, take my break now, but it depends on you. But I think if once we get into the habit of actually doing this, it's more within a 24-hour period or within an 8-hour day. I'll tell you what typically does happen. People feel anxious, they feel super stressed, and instead of setting a limit and working super hard and then letting go and recalibrating and rebalancing, what they do is mindless work.
Been there.
just stupid stuff. And you think you're actually getting things done, but you're not. You're actually procrastinating getting what you really need to get done.
Yeah. Avoidance, distraction.
Because you're avoiding.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're distracting yourself. Now, yeah, you're clearing your inbox and you're getting rid of your voicemails and you're paying your bills.
Yeah.
But like, you're not actually dealing with the main fire that has to be put out. Do that for 2 hours, 3 hours. If you're not ready, take a break and then do it in an hour. But have a time and then face that music, deal with it, and then you're off. So just being more mindful of like leaning in versus the recalibration, that's where the opportunity is of anxiety.
Yeah. And David, what do you think, like when in the times when, and you were speaking to the spiral earlier, when it does spiral up and that judge, you know, voice, self-critical voice just gets out of hand and it does go off the rails in that way. Where does self-compassion kind of play into all this?
That's exactly where it comes in. And it happens to me. You know, I study, I talk about this stuff literally all day. I've written about it on podcasts. I mean, I love talking about this, and really hectic times happen. I remember a couple months ago, early fall, had a really intense meeting with a group of people. Some clinical stuff came up, some administrative stuff came up in my offices at Center for Anxiety. And I'm like, whoa, I'm overloaded. I need to take a walk. I left the office. I'm like, guys, I need a break. Left the office. I took a 30-minute walk. I went to the Boston Garden. It was beautiful. It was really, really nice. I'm lucky to be able to do that. And I came back, I'm like, got a snack, you know, got myself a warm drink. I'm like, okay, we're ready. We can do this. And like, but you got to catch it. You can't just plow through it. And I think my training has helped me to like lean into that and be okay with it, as opposed to just ignoring it. And then you end up in a bad situation.
Right. And it sounds like that was a helpful tool. I'm sure many of our small business owners can relate to, of just like, if you are aware of it and you have a moment to get out, that change of environment, some movement, some engaging your body, yep, changing your physiology a little bit, going somewhere beautiful and using that as a kind of a path to start to have some of that self-compassion.
Yeah, 100%. And it is an act of self-compassion. Here's another one, sleep. Okay. Mm. So people, especially entrepreneurs, especially small business owners, are not good at this at all. And if you're running ragged, you're going to be making worse decisions. You're going to have costly errors. you're going to hire the wrong people. You end up with the wrong clients. I've seen it all.
Yep.
Sharpen the saw. You know, 8 hours of sleep is probably the best investment you could. 8 hours a night. I know that sounds insane.
Yeah.
I realize. But 8 hours a night is probably the best financial investment anybody can make in their business. I've seen it, I don't know how many times.
Incredible. Incredible. I love that. Listen to that, everybody. Listen to that. 8 hours of sleep a night.
Talking Too Loud, hosted by Chris Savage, is brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. On each episode of Talking Too Loud, Wistia CEO and self-proclaimed loud talker Chris Savage takes you inside the minds of entrepreneurs as they share the hilarious, informative, and most challenging aspects of building more human brands. On a recent episode titled The Many Benefits of Inclusive Marketing with Sonia Thompson, Chris chats with Sonia about what you can start doing right now to help customers feel more seen, valued, and understood when engaging with your brand. You will also learn why inclusive marketing matters, how it's shaping customer-led growth, and what it looks like when it's actually done right. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you get your podcasts. And now back to the show.
I'd be curious, and maybe this is a good kind of transition, you know, mentioning, you know, obviously getting outside, you know, moving a little bit, having some self-compassion, sleep, things you can do. What are some other, you know, preventative measures that small business owners listening could do, you know, up front to maybe, you know, mitigate that anxiety a little bit before it impacts their business?
After those strategies, I got to say relationships. Okay, so yeah, beyond romance, it can definitely be a friend, and that can certainly, you know, but those friendships, if you think about it, who are your best friends? They're the people who've seen you at your worst. They're the people who are there for you, and they know that you're not perfect, right?
Yeah.
Maybe people in the office think you're, you know, God's gift to mankind, but like your friends know who you really are.
Yeah. Right? That's what we say about Bobby all the time. God's gift to mankind.
Hey, you know what? Yeah. I didn't ask for it.
And definitely with a therapist too. You know, I tell my patients all the time, if I don't see you at your worst, I'm not doing my job.
Yeah.
Sounds like practicing vulnerability in general. It just, just embracing anxiety, the whole overarching, I feel like the thesis of this podcast, like you said, is embracing it and to embrace his vulnerability. He said, I got it. Oh man.
You got it. Woo. Yeah, you definitely got it. But we all human beings need somebody else who actually sees who we really are and to learn to be okay being real like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, David, this has been fantastic. I would love to almost just pivot a little bit to kind of get to some maybe just situational tools, if you will. How do you see, again, for the small business owner, how do you see maybe unmanaged anxiety, you know, impacting the decision-making process? Oh, yeah. Like it, you know? Yeah.
The train wrecks.
Yeah.
I'll tell you where it comes out a lot. It comes out a lot in people's families. Like sometimes people will, it's a hard to talk about, but I've seen a lot of people in the C-suite who have lost family members to suicide because there was, they were extremely successful at their business, but emotionally out of tune because they didn't lean into these feelings, became more disconnected unto themselves, which ironically, in many cases, was a reason for their success because they were avoiding these feelings by just pushing themselves into their work.
Yeah.
And the consequences are often quite disastrous. I work with a lot of folks who, you know, they got a driver, pulls up to the clinic outside, you know, some of them even flying in private, like the works. And often I always like to say, like, the hardest cases are the children of families that the best looking kids, best education, got the most money in the family and the most expectations, and the parents just don't get it. So I think we all have the capacity. And obviously, if that's going on in the background, it's going to be very hard to manage. Very hard to manage one's business, and it can impact it in a big way.
Yeah, and how about on maybe kind of going in really specifically to like the day to day in business moments? If you're, you know, experiencing, like, how do you make sure anxiety isn't like clouding your judgment in the decision making process during the day to day?
Okay, one big way that it comes out in the business setting is anger.
Mm-hmm.
If you're finding yourself getting snippy with people who you work with, people who work for you, people you work for that matter. If you're getting feedback like, hey, like you're a little bit too aggressive, too irritated, too pointed, too forward, you know, those kinds of things. Often, and I write about this in my book in chapter 6, anger is a conversion of one's anxiety. Mm. So people are feeling tense. And instead of telling somebody else in the office, hey, what you're doing is kind of stressing me out. Can we try a different tact? They're like, you're an idiot. Why the hell did you do that? You know? And like that's not an effective way to manage one's emotions or one's team.
Yeah.
So I've definitely seen that a lot.
Yeah. And I guess what's that kind of, you know, right before the moment of outburst or of emoting that anger toward at another person, like what's the safeguard? What's the check that we can bring to that awareness for ourselves to kind of catch that before then?
I'll tell you right now, it's called the fight or flight system for a reason, right? And people's fight or flight, that's the anxiety system going into gear. If you can just be aware, like, whoa, I'm in fight or flight. Like this is, obviously I'm jazzed up. Something's intense right now. And I got to take a breather. This is, you know, before you get to that point, obviously, you know, and I think if we lean into our anxiety using the broad strategies that we're talking about beforehand, we probably won't get to this place. But if the minute you start to feel yourself getting angry or getting petulant, you know, passive aggressive with people in the office, that you need to take a break. No question.
Well, and David, what I'm also thinking about too is, I mean, this conversation has been fantastic at identifying just what's going on within ourselves. Is there, and I know it's not the responsibility of the other party who's on the receiving end of that anger. Are there strategies, because I know that what we've been able to do too is identify how this is working, say, in other people or our coworkers or our, you know, family or spouse or whatever. And is there something, tactics or strategies that the other side that we could use if we're observing this in the sense of going, hey, it seems like you're feeling pretty activated here. It seems like you're feeling pretty frustrated. Let's take a break.
You sound like you got a future in psychology over there.
My wife's a therapist.
Here we go.
Really?
Oh, that's, there you go.
I know. It's 13 years in there. So I've been, I've soaked it in just by proxy there.
She taught you well. I think another aspect of that is recognizing if someone's getting amped up and angry, there's probably some anxiety going on beneath the surface. Often it's like, whoa, why are you getting angry? What's wrong with you? As opposed to like, oh, I see that you're really tense right now. And, you know, I'm going to take a break and pause from this conversation because let's let ourselves self-regulate for a little bit and then come back to it. But at the same time, like, it does clue you into the fact that there's something, some sort of tension beneath the surface that needs to be addressed. It's not always, anger isn't just anger. Usually there's something underneath. There's an undercurrent of anxiety, which can be helpful to identify and address.
Sure, sure. Because that can also activate anxiety and anger of the other person going, like you said, what's
oh,
wrong with you? Why are you getting so hot about this? What's Yeah.
The next thing you know, you're throwing, you know, water cooler in
the jar. Exactly.
Right. Well, David, what are maybe a couple ways that us as leaders, small business owners, can foster maybe a supportive environment within our teams?
I'm really glad you asked about this. First of all, anxiety is going to be high among your teams, especially if you have younger staff. People in their 20s are really amped up and anxious today for a variety of cultural reasons. Most of all is because they have this expectation that everything's, you know, that their emotions are supposed to be even keeled and okay all the time. And I think we know statistically, people who are older adults, they're less dysregulated when they feel anxious. They're less sensitive to their anxiety. They're less upset by the fact that they might feel tense, anxious. So given that's the case, I think there have to be conversations with staff through HR. You know, there's a lot of programming going on. You know, I've been definitely doing my share of corporate speaking for businesses on this topic. You know, this podcast is apparently a great place that you can start and maybe share it with your, sharing it with your staff, just so they understand and they know that you get it and that they're going to be experiencing tension. Now, that doesn't mean going easy on them all the time. You might have certain demands as a business owner that have to get met. And that can be part of the conversation. Like, this is going to be a tense time. We have a massive project. It's going to be late nights. I know this is going to be tense. How can I minimize or reduce? I'm not going to get rid of your anxiety. You're not going to get rid of your anxiety. How can we manage this so that way we can make it over the hump the next 2 weeks, the next month, whatever it is? But having those conversations, I think, is actually helpful. And having people on staff and consultants to guide that process makes a huge difference.
Sounds like communication and just having empathy and identifying it. And then everybody knows that we're all on the same side of it. That's great.
When you simplify it down, I guess that's what it boils down to.
Yeah. And I guess I'd be curious too, David, like how important do you feel that it is for, you know, the leader of the company, the leader of the small business to really communicate outwardly to the team with that empathy, with that vulnerability, with that acknowledgement?
So let me tell you something. I've seen a lot of cases where a little bit of self-disclosure to the whole team goes a long way, because there's only one thing which is worse than being a 20-something and working and struggling with your own anxiety and judging yourself. That's doing all that while you're working for someone who's perfect.
Yeah.
That's like adding insult to injury.
Yeah.
But if the head of a company can stand up and say, hey, it's been a rough month, and here's what I'm going through. And you don't have to disclose everything that you would to your therapist or to your, you know, best friend, or you don't have to cry on everyone's shoulder in the office. Like, I'm not saying that, but just a little bit of acknowledgement that, like, hey, we've been through a rough time, or it's a rough time of year, or what's going on in the world, or whatever it is. Some acknowledgement of it. It doesn't have to be political. It doesn't have to be economic even. It can simply be woven into the, you know, an introductory remarks during an address to the company, or into a memo, or anything. Just the acknowledgement of it, as, you know, Bobby was saying, just the empathy and knowing that you feel that way. I understand that others might feel that way too.
Yeah. And maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, maybe that is part of why that's so valuable, is because you're one, you know, expressing that, hey, you're not alone in this. I experience it as well as the leader of the company, that even though you may be having that judgment voice in your head, that again, that's, you're not on an island there having that voice all by yourself. And maybe there's some hope and camaraderie in that.
You know, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got from somebody very early in my training, in my clinical training, is that all successful psychotherapy should have two elements. Number one, you are not alone. And number two, there's hope for the future. It doesn't matter, by the way, if it's psychodynamic or if it's cognitive behavioral, if it's humanistic, like all the different schools of psychotherapy thought, they all provide those two things in their different ways. And if a business owner can do the same, it doesn't have to be therapy.
Yeah.
You're not alone. And this is not going to be this way forever.
Right. Well, David, this has been such a fantastic conversation. I know it's going to be so valuable for our entire audience of small business owners that are with us, for their teams as well, and for the customers they serve. Again, we're thrilled about this new book for you, Thriving with Anxiety, 9 Tools to Make Anxiety Work for You. David, what final thoughts do you have today for our listeners?
I will tell you this. We live in very anxious times. And having conversations like this is really the next step for, I believe, for all of corporate America. So the small business owners that are eventually going to be Fortune 500s, you know, all you're really going to be the ones leading the charge to be able to shape, you know, a lot more than I can. How many patients can I see a week? How many people can I help in my clinics, in my research? At the end of the day, if you have a company with 1,000, 10,000 people, or even just, you know, 50 or whatever it is, their mental health and the wellness and the success of ultimately of your business is going to be, at least part of this has to be, I think, part and parcel of the future of corporations. So good luck to everyone on the call with that charge.
Yes. David, thank you so much. Hey, where can people go to either get your book or learn more about you and lean in a bit more to doing this work for themselves?
Well, the book's available wherever books are sold, including Audible. And so there are audio versions of it. My personal website, dhrosmarin.com. I've got a free giveaway actually on the site, a 12-page guide about thriving with anxiety. And people can reach out. You know, I love to hear from people who've read the book. Don't be shy.
Wonderful. Well, hey, thank you so much for being with us today, for the work that you do on your day to day, for then putting it down in a book with some practical steps that can go out. And I am honestly grateful to get to be here and have this conversation with you today. And I look forward to seeing this ripple impact as this goes out into our listeners, into their businesses, and into the people that they serve as well. So thank you for being with us today, David.
Okay, thank you.
James, that conversation was first and foremost enlightening.
Yep. Absolutely.
I mean, just so fantastic. Everything that Dr. Ross Marin broke down about, especially the front end of the conversation when I came in, he goes, Bobby, you cannot cure your anxiety. Don't read my book if you want to fix your anxiety.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't trying to fix my anxiety, right. But I understand. Why did I get so mad there? It's all coming together. My anxiety then transformed into anger.
And now you have the tools to accept it, Bobby.
You know what? And I'm glad that this is happening in real time.
Me too.
But really, I mean, all the tools that he broke down today and just the way to look at it and embrace it was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely, Bobby. And I think for me, one of the things that he mentioned, just the importance of when you get triggered and that anxiety starts spiraling up and you have that voice of judgment, that critical voice that's coming in, I should be doing this, I should whatever, to have that self-compassion. And self-compassion, I think for me, just as a valuable tool to kind of reduce some of that anxiety in the moment, super valuable for me. Hope it was valuable for all of you listening as well today.
All right. At the end of every episode, we give you a plan of action from today's conversation. These are the main takeaways that you can immediately implement to strengthen and grow your business. Today's plan of action is to write down and track your anxiety.
Yeah, write it down. I love what David said at the end of every day, to take a minute, take some time to take inventory.
Exactly.
Take inventory of your day. Look back, reflect on the day and go, where were those moments where I experienced anxiety today? Where were those moments where maybe I let it spiral out in that negative anxiety spiral? But to just bring some awareness as you reflect on your day and then to share it with somebody, to have that conversation, to be vulnerable in that way. But by bringing awareness as you reflect on your day, you also bring that same awareness that will carry over into your day to day. So as you are in the moment, in the trenches, growing your business, working with your team, we all have that opportunity to pause for a moment when we get triggered, like David said, to pause for a moment to accept our anxiety, to have some self-compassion there. And that's one of the tools that we can use to help reduce that. And I love how he said that once we accept anxiety as a natural part of life, we can turn it into a strength. So, Bobby, how are you feeling now?
I'm feeling anxious, and that's okay.
That's okay. Well, everybody listening, I hope that was valuable for you today and you've got some practical tools that you can take and begin to implement into your life to ultimately help you thrive even with anxiety. So thanks as always for listening to the Business Made Simple podcast, where we are obsessed with helping you grow your small business, and we'll see you next week.